what you're listening to.
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
It's a Tuesday edition of the Coach's Corner here on KOAL 107.3 FM, 750 AM. And we got to talk some soccer. We've talked a lot of junior college soccer as the season there continues to move on. And USU Eastern actually in action this afternoon. But for this particular segment, we're going to talk Emory Lady Spartan Soccer. And joining us back on the air today, we have Coach Eric Nielsen. Coach, it's always great to hear from you. Great to get you back on the show. Thank you.
Well, yeah, thank you. It's always nice to be on your show and get a chance to talk about some soccer.
Yeah, you know, you guys are really, this is a cool thing, Coach. I mean, 2 years of existence, 2 years you guys have now qualified for the state tournament. That's something that just doesn't happen too often. I mean, you guys have had a lot of immediate success getting into the postseason two consecutive years.
We have, and it's really exciting for the girls and the people over here that they've really come in and put in a lot of hard work for 2 years, and they're seeing immediate results from that, and like you said, that's hard to come by, but we're glad for where we're at right now.
The one thing that I know always stands out, especially when you have such a young group of girls like you guys did last year, is the development, Coach. So going back to last season and looking at the end, you know, where you guys ended in the first round of the state tournament last year, and looking at this year's team, how much of an improvement have you seen from the underclassmen?
You know, it's really amazing. It's almost night and day, and I look back at last year, and I thought at the end of last year we were really starting to play well and play together, and this year we've just taken off. The girls have worked even harder on their footwork, their passing, and it's fun to watch our team now. We're passing around some of these teams in our region now, and our footwork has caught up and kind of surpassed some of the teams. Now, that's something we didn't see last year. And huge improvement that way.
Well, before we talk about the state tournament, Coach, I want to talk about the end of the season. You guys finished third in Region 15. You finished 4-4 in league play. You look at that and you say 500, second year of existence. It's not too shabby. You guys had a dry spell there where you lost three games. I had a one goal loss to Gunnison, and then lost to Grand, a team that you guys had beat earlier in the season. Even though you guys managed to bounce back and win your last two league games of the season, were you happy with that 4-4 record, or do you think it's, you know, more plausible you guys should have been 6-2 or maybe 5-3?
Well, I really thought, you know, early in the season we were in a good position. And really kind of looking to take second in reach, and that was more or less my goal this year. And it was a little bit disappointing, and I don't want to make, you know, excuses. We lost over at Gunnison and then a game at home against Grand that I thought we really could have played in. Came up short there, so that was a little bit disappointing, but sometimes things don't go our way. You know, you're always going to have games where girls aren't at their best, and that did hurt us a little bit. But really, we've improved from last year. I'd like to have a positive perspective on things. We've improved. We've got the third seed outright this year, and we've beat every team in our region except for Manti, and I think that's a huge accomplishment being our second year.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. And I know Manti, they're a very, very good soccer squad. And I do want to talk about Manti in just a moment because that's a common opponent between you guys and Waterford. We'll get to that. But, Coach, you guys end the regular season with a 5-2 victory over Gunnison. Monumental win there. You guys had a playoff spot already clinched with that victory over North Sevier. But by beating Gunnison, that means you guys were the 3 seed instead of the 4 seed. And in talking to you off of the cup, that's a big difference this year.
Oh, it is. Yeah, it's definitely going in as a 3rd seed. You know, it's not uncommon to see 3rd seeds beat 2nd seeds in the playoffs in high school. You know, that's actually pretty common to happen. I think we're in a good spot. Should match up with this team a little better than we would a 1st seed. And so we're excited to go up there and show these other schools what we can do.
Again, our guest right now is Coach Eric Nielsen of the Emory Lady Spartan Soccer Squad. They're getting ready to take on Waterford tomorrow. That'll be the first round of the 2A State Championship Tournament. Emory on the road at Waterford. Coach, this is a team that has won their last three games. They've won those three by a combined score of 29-0. They look pretty good on paper. They're from a very difficult, very talented region in Region 14. They finished in second place, losing only to Roland Hall, and that's a team that they played tit-for-tat with in the two matchups this season. What do you know about Waterford?
You know, I don't know a lot about Waterford. They do have traditionally a very good team. And, you know, most years they make a long playoff run. They're going to be a tough opponent up there. But I have confidence in our girls, and if we can go and have a consistent and hard-played game, I think we can hang with them.
You talk about being consistent. What are some of the aspects of the game that you've noticed sometimes get a little sluggish and that you guys have to improve on to have success in this game?
Well, and I think some of that goes to still having a young team and being our second year. 80 minutes is a long time to really play consistent, hard, fought soccer. For example, when we played Manti earlier this season at home, we actually scored first on them. We had them on the ropes, 1-1 tie at halftime, and we played them very well in the second half. It's just a few minutes here and a few minutes there where we kind of let our play down and have a little inconsistency and seem to give up goals at that time. I really feel like if we can go up there and have a hard-fought 80-minute game, that we'll give ourselves a chance to win.
How important is tempo in this contest? I mean, Waterford, being the higher seed, I would expect them to come out of this game, especially being at home, and be a little bit more aggressive. So for you guys to try to set the tempo, maybe even shorten the game up a little bit, how important is that?
Oh, well, I think, I just want the girls to go out there really and play our game, play like we know how to play. They have scored a lot of goals. Waterford scores a lot of goals. They're going to come out pushing hard, and you know, if we'll pass, that's kind of one thing that we emphasize. If we'll pass through the midfield and get the ball up to our forwards and our wings early, that kind of spreads the field out so that Waterford's not just pounding on us the whole game. If we can spread it out up the field, it'll open their defense up. It'll give us opportunities. So I look to come out early and try to get the ball upfield, out to our wings, and that'll set the tempo for us and show Waterford, hey, we're here to play. You know, you're going to have to get back and defend us.
In the two-way classification, Coach, we have a lot of academies that have advanced to the postseason. Mazer Prep, American Leadership, Waterford, Roland Hall. I mean, there's quite a few of them. Some of the academies also in the postseason. Why is it that these academies have such success out on the soccer field?
Well, I have my theories and my opinion on that. I don't want to get into that too much. They are put into our 2A classification, and a lot of them have soccer as their main sport. They don't have a lot of other sports. So they're attractive to some of these kids up north that, you know, may not make it onto some of these bigger schools teams. They can go here to an academy, get a good education, and be able to work on soccer. That's kind of their emphasis at the school, and so they have good teams. And like I said, I don't want to get into that too much. Being in the 2A classification with them, we're going to go up there and play them and do our best to compete with this Waterford team.
With that being said, I mean, you got a school like Manti, who you guys share Region 15 with. They've had some success against these academy schools. So it's not to say that the public schools can't compete with them, because that doesn't seem to be the case at all.
Oh, no. Yeah, absolutely. I think we can go up and have a good choice. Last year, Millard beat Mazer Prep for the championship game. So we had a public school that did it last year. It's fewer public schools are winning the championship in 2A, but it is possible, and we've seen it done. Manti traditionally can make it, you know, a couple of rounds in the playoffs as well. And we're still building. I mean, that's our goal, is to, you know, now we're a third seed, let's make it to the next round of the playoffs, and let's get higher there. Let's go compete with these academy schools.
How important would a playoff victory be to the development of this Emory High School soccer program?
You know, I think it'd be great. There's a lot of excitement now being in the playoffs, and to really be able to come back and have some pride in that, going up there and winning a playoff game, that'd be huge for this program. And I don't think if we lose, I don't think it's going to be detrimental. I think there's still a lot of excitement in soccer. So either way, I think our development will continue the way it is, and we'll be fine. A win would be really nice, though.
I don't want to look forward to next season yet, Coach, because obviously there's a lot of soccer still to be played. But how excited are you to bring the majority of this group back? You only have one senior on this year's team. So knowing that you're going to have this team back next season, how excited are you for that?
Well, we're definitely excited. And, you know, we already have these girls are committed here. They've come and worked hard for 2 years. Here's going to be our second year of playoff experience. They're committed to coming in the off season, coming in the summer, and doing these extra workouts to get better and to become like Manti. We talked about this through the season. We want to become like Manti. We want to become like Millard. We want to, you know, kind of become like these schools that can go up and compete with these academy schools and you know, others across the state.
Well, Coach, I always look forward to talking with you. I do appreciate you making out time. Again, best of luck as you guys travel to Waterford tomorrow. And hopefully the next time we talk to you, we're talking about a victory and potentially playing at home against either Delta or American Leadership, or playing against Delta or American Leadership.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks for having me on your show. And we're going to go up tomorrow and give them all we've got.
That's Coach Eric Nielsen of the Emory Lady Spartans Soccer Squad talking about their first-round matchup against Waterford. Best of luck to the Lady Spartans. We'll keep tabs on them right here on Drive Time Sports. We're going to pause for just a moment. When we come back, we'll talk NFL football. Week 5 is now in the books. And if you're 1-4, is it over with? How many teams have made the playoffs since the NFL went to a 12-team playoff back in 1990 after losing 4 out of your first 5 games? We'll dissect that. Which teams can we write off, and which 1-win teams are still very capable of getting to the postseason? Plus, we got to talk some baseball. David Ortiz, his career is over. Big Poppy finished. We'll talk about that when we return to Tribe Time Sports.
This is Derek Favors, number 15 from the Utah Jazz. You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
3-point game. Harris, pick and roll. Favors takes it strong and one. Oh, my. Watch Derek Favors take a leap right here.
We're back on Drive Time Sports. KOAL 103.9 FM, 750 AM. Your host, Jordan Buscarini. We're going to talk NFL. Step away from the local sports front to talk some NFL football. Last night, we had a different Monday night game. I don't think the schedule makers in the NFL anticipated a contest like that when this one was scheduled. First off, I had high expectations for Tampa Bay going into the season. And by high expectations, I mean I thought they would be a borderline playoff team, hover around that 7-9, 8-8 mark. I'm a big Jameis Winston guy. I think he's going to be very, very good. And last night, against a secondary that hasn't been all that great this season, he was mediocre at best, I thought. Jameis finished 18 of 30, 219 yards and a touchdown. I expected a bigger game out of Jameis last night. Roberto Aguayo is not very good. You just don't know what you're going to get out of this guy, and I think it's a mental thing with him. We saw his ability to kick the football at Florida State over the past 4 years, and for some reason, it seems like every time this guy is kicking, you just really have, I don't know, a feeling in your gut like the worst-case scenario. Something bad is going to happen. But Tampa Bay, they get out to a 6-0 lead. Carolina takes a 14-6 lead, and the Buccaneers come back to get the win. Where does that leave a really odd-looking NFC South right now? At the very top of that division, it's the Atlanta Falcons. At the very bottom of that division, it's the Carolina Panthers. Panthers and Saints, but the Panthers have one more loss. They're sitting at 1-4. Here's a statistic for teams that have started 1-3 compared to teams who have started 1-4. And this is why I put such emphasis on Arizona finding a way to beat San Francisco on Thursday and Carolina needing a win last night. Since the NFL went to a 12-team playoff format back in 1990, a total of 27 teams have managed to overcome a 1-3 start to make the playoffs. Four of those made it all the way to their conference championship game, and one of those four, New England, that's when they beat the Rams in Super Bowl 36, won the Super Bowl. But if you start 1-4, your chances of making the postseason shrink incredibly. Only 7 of the 312 playoff teams since 1990, or 2% for you mathematicians, have started 1-4 or worse and made it to the postseason. Two out of those 7 instances occurred last season, believe it or not. Houston was 1-4. They rallied. They won the AFC South at 9-7. Kansas City actually started 1-5, and then they won their last 11 regular season games and defeated Houston in the wild card round before they were knocked out by New England. So the other 1-4 teams to reach the postseason, the 92 Chargers and the 2002 Jets, the 2002 Titans did it, the 2004 Packers, and the 2011 Broncos. With that in mind, this was a huge week for a lot of teams, because the numbers are not in your favor if you start off 1-4. So we take a look at the 1-4 teams now. Carolina's 1-4. I am not going to completely write off Carolina because I think that highly of Cam Newton. And if Cam Newton can come back, I think Sunday's a very winnable game for this team. They're at New Orleans. Then there's a huge game on October 30th. So if Newton doesn't play this week, the Panthers have a bye. He'd bounce back and come in on October 30th for sure, but I think they need to rush him because you cannot lose to the New Orleans Saints and you're on the road. Panthers have to have this game. If they win that, look at this next stretch. They get the Cardinals. Huge game. They get the Rams. So right there you have two games against the NFC West, and both the Cardinals and Rams are fighting for their playoff lives to make sure they stay in the mix at this particular time. So you have three huge games coming up for the Carolina Panthers. I'm not going to write the Panthers off yet. I think they still can get to the postseason, but Cam Newton has to be right, and it's going to be on the arm and the feet of Cam Newton. That's how this team gets to the postseason. The Saints at 1-3, I don't think anyone expects them to go to the postseason. The 49ers are at 1-4. You can go ahead and write them off. The San Diego Chargers at 1-4. This is probably the best 1-4 team in the NFL because you have the leader in touchdowns so far this season and Melvin Gordon in the backfield. He's looked great in his sophomore campaign. And the Chargers realistically should be 5-0. They have blown all four games that they have lost. Brief history for you. They held a 21-point lead with 18 minutes to play in the game against Kansas City. Kansas City went on a 24-3 run. They forced overtime, won the coin toss, scored a touchdown on the opening drive in the extra frame. Biggest comeback win in Chiefs history. And realistically, this is one of the worst losses under Mike McCoy. This was back in week one. Week two, they fire back. They top Jacksonville 38-14. Solid win. A lot of people expected Jacksonville to be very good this year. Lose to the Colts 26-22 in a game where the Colts were up 10-0. Chargers managed to make it 13-13 going into the break. Melvin Gordon scores a touchdown, so the Chargers take a 19-13 lead because they do not convert the PAT. Indianapolis scores. They take a 20-19 lead. San Diego takes a 22-20 lead. And then T.Y. Hilton catches a 63-yard touchdown pass from Andrew Luck with a minute left. That's how they lost their second game of the season. So now they're 1-2. Look at the Saints. 35-34 was the final score in this one. And this was week four of the season, just weeks after the Kansas City loss. San Diego has a 13-point lead in the fourth quarter. The Chargers lost fumbles on two consecutive offensive plays that set up two Saints touchdowns. Phillip Rivers throws an interception on a potential game-winning drive, and New Orleans runs out the clock. Again, you find a way to lose a game. And then, contest against the Raiders. Chargers' late-game implosion got off to an early start in this one. Melvin Gordon had a third-quarter fumble, set up a short-scoring drive for the Raiders. Oakland scored again after a 3-and-out. They stretched their lead to 10. Phillip Rivers then went to work, led a touchdown drive. He got his team in field goal range. And then you had a bobbled snap, which led to no field goal attempt at all, and the Chargers fall 34-31. So San Diego, can we write them off? I don't think you can write them off quite yet. They've had a lot of bad luck, and they've had a lot of late-game collapses. Probably the best 1-4 team in football right now, and they're three games back of the Raiders and Broncos, which I don't know if you can actually run down a division race at this point in time with winning one of your first five games. I'm not willing to write San Diego off just quite yet. Another 1-3 team, Jacksonville. I picked Jacksonville to get into the postseason. In fact, they were my pick to win the AFC South, and I still have a lot of faith in Jacksonville. And again, I'd have to go back to that 1-3 start compared to 1-4. That's what you have to pay attention to. So teams that are 1-3, 27, again, have made the playoffs since 1990. Now, one thing to take into consideration, the AFC South stinks. Indianapolis is not a good football team. Tennessee is not a good football team. Houston has some injury problems, and they have Brock Osweiler at quarterback, who I think is, now, I don't think he's bad. He's got the weapons on the outside with DeAndre Hopkins and also Will Fuller, and then he got Lamar Miller out of the backfield. So they have the options offensively. I worry about Houston defensively. They gave up a lot of points to Minnesota this past Sunday. The Browns are 0-5. They're finished. And then you have the Jets and the Dolphins. They're both 1-4. They're finished because neither one of them have a prayer of catching New England in that division. And then you have Buffalo. So I think you have two teams in that division that are better than both the Jets and the Dolphins. And that's how you have to dissect teams with one win. Jacksonville, they can beat any team in the AFC South. San Diego, I think they can beat any team in the AFC West. Carolina, I don't think the Panthers are that bad of a football team when Cam Newton is right. The Chicago Bears are 1-4 as well. They stink. And again, looking at the teams in the division that are better than them, you cannot tell me that Chicago's better than Green Bay, Minnesota, or Detroit. So they're done. Out of the teams with one win right now, get rid of San Francisco. They're eliminated. Chicago, I will eliminate them. I will also flush the Cleveland Browns, the Miami Dolphins, and the New York Jets. Teams with one win or less that have the best chance of sneaking into the postseason and making a comeback the last 11 games, San Diego, they can do it. I still think Carolina can do it. Drew Brees is under center in New Orleans. I just don't see a real solid chance there. We're talking about the bad teams in the NFL for this particular segment. And again, I'm going to throw that stat out there for you. Which of these teams is going to be this year's Kansas City Chiefs or Houston Texans squad? I do believe that one of these 1-4 squads will sneak into the postseason, 1-4 or 1-3. It's only happened seven times since 1990, but I think it happens again this year. Happened twice last year. We do have to pause for a quick commercial break. We've talked local sports, wrapping up some NFL football. We'll come back, put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports, 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750, the play-by-play home of the Utah Jazz.
This is Nick Tropiano with the Anaheim Angels, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini. Here comes a comeback.
The kid is back on track. We're back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM, 750 AM. Final segment of the day, and we have to talk about David Ortiz and the Boston Red Sox. Their season ended last night, three-game sweep at the hands of Cleveland. Shocked me a little bit. I do like Cleveland an awful lot. I thought it was a great story with Francona. I actually thought Boston had a chance to get to the World Series. I thought that was a team that was going to cause some grief as far as the American League playoffs go, but Cleveland made fast work of this squad. So now the big storyline here, I don't know that it's necessarily Cleveland moving on as much as it is David Ortiz is finished. Big Poppy's career is over. And regardless where you put him on your all-time list, people really get into that. And we can look at the numbers here in a moment. But wherever you put him, fact remains he is one of the most important players to ever wear a Red Sox uniform. And obviously people will take a look at the individual numbers, and that's fine. David Ortiz was a very important fixture for the Boston Red Sox during his entire career there, which was back in 2003. won 3 World Series championships. The Red Sox, as an organization, have won 8. So he's been there for 3 rings. And, I mean, you take a look at the accomplishments individually, award-wise. So 3-time World Series champ, World Series MVP back in 2013. He was the ALCS MVP in 2004. Won the Hank Aaron Award in 2005. 6-time Silver Slugger, 7-time Edgar Martinez Award. He did lead the American League in home runs only once during his time. That was back in 2006. But he was a 3-time AL RBI leader. So that's it. You look at the individual accomplishments for Ortiz. And again, I said that he's one of the most important players to ever wear a Boston Red Sox uniform. I mean, we're talking Babe Ruth, Ted Williams. I'd throw Pedro Martinez in there. I think you throw Carl Yastrzemski in there. You know, there's anywhere from 5 to 10 names that I would talk about as being one of the most important players to wear a Red Sox uniform. I'd put David Ortiz in there. The idea of David Ortiz and Manny Ramirez in the same lineup in the early 2000s is something that I'll never forget as a baseball fan, no doubt. And one of the other things that I think is a great bookend to David Ortiz's career in Boston, this team goes from worst to first, and Ortiz's numbers improved during his last season over his career average. Like, he batted .315 this year. He's a career average .286 guy. His OBP was .401 this season. Career-wise, he's looking at .380. Slugging percentage this year, .620. Career-wise, .552. So in his final year, he didn't go out like Kobe. You know, you look at some of the guys that we've said goodbye to. Peyton Manning happened to win a Super Bowl. But I guess you could probably make the argument that the Broncos may have won the Super Bowl without Peyton Manning. That's a legitimate argument. He was horrible in the regular season. Tim Duncan's time in San Antonio this last year, he was irrelevant. Kobe was not good his final year with the Lakers. He was a great show. People bought tickets. The farewell tour in every state that Kobe went to, every city that he played in during the final year of his career was fantastic. We have to mention Kevin Garnett as well. His days are gone. So the names I just mentioned, Kobe, Duncan, Garnett, and Peyton Manning, those guys were not even close to matching career numbers their final season. Not even close. David Ortiz was. In fact, if you look at baseball, David Ortiz's season, individual stat-wise, is going to be up there with some of the greatest farewell tours in baseball history. Like Ted Williams in 1960, probably owns the greatest final season of any player who ever lived, and he probably deserves some bonus points for picking up a home run in his final at-bat of his career at Fenway. He only got to the plate 390 times. David Ortiz, nearly twice as many extra base hits as Ted Williams in that final season. But Ted Williams, his statistics in his final year were fantastic. For me, I think the greatest final season in baseball has to go to Sandy Koufax, and this is why. He's the only pitcher in history to win a Cy Young in his final season. He led both leagues in ERA, strikeouts, wins, and innings, and his 10.3 wins above replacement blows away what David Ortiz did this year. I think it was like 4.5 is where David Ortiz was sitting. That is very difficult to beat, and a lot of people would bring up Barry Bonds as well, depending on how you really, you know, view Barry Bonds' career. Led the majors in OBP and in walks. He was so feared in his final season. He had 43 intentional walks in 126 games. He was still very viable. Joe Jackson, if you go back and you look at the statistics, led the American League in triples in his final season. Batted .382. Roberto Clemente had a great final season. Jackie Robinson, Kirby Puckett, Mariano Rivera. There are a lot of guys that you could spin numbers for. To me, it's Sandy Koufax, and really in the top five, I think David Ortiz had one of the best farewell seasons from a baseball player that we've ever witnessed. Following the game yesterday, Ortiz sat down at the podium. He talked a little bit about when it finally hit him that his career was over.
Tonight, when I walked into the mound, I realized that it was going to be, it was over. You know, it was pretty much probably the last time as a player walking in front of a crowd, and emotion came back out again. I'm happy, not just for me, not just for how my career went down. I'm happy for this organization, for the big step that we took going from last place to win the division this year, even if things didn't end up the way we were looking for. But I believe that in baseball, especially in the baseball game that we play in today's day, it's a big step because it's like going from bad to good from day to night.
It was a very special moment last night. When the game was done, Ortiz came out of the dugout, tipped the hat to the crowd, stood there, took a final look at everyone. I mean, and Fenway was rocking. Rocking. A lot of emotion. Boy, that's a respect moment right there. It's fantastic. That's what the game's all about. Ortiz continued to talk to the media as well during his post-game conference, and he had to give a shout-out to his parents. He said upbringing was a very big part of where he's at, and he also talked about not being a five-tool player. Because when you talk about Hall of Fame here for David Ortiz, we'll go into it in just a minute. This guy's a DH, and he admits, I'm not a five-tool player.
My parents, they, you know, did their best with myself. They raised me the right way. Everything I am and everything I have besides God, you know, I thank them every day for being, you know, hard on me, being responsible, show me responsibility, show me matters, show me the important things about life. And what I learned, that's what I put in play. Like I always say, I wasn't a 5-tool player. I played with so many great players that I used to tell myself, there's no way I can be that good. But most of them didn't have what I had, my mindset, my mentality, the way I grab knowledge on things. And I think that's one of the best things that's one of the best talent that God can give to any human. I've been blessed with that one tool that got me a 20-year career, and the rest is history.
I don't think anybody will deny that David Ortiz should be in the Hall of Fame. And again, you go back to 2003, and there's a little bit of the PEDs. I think it's already been addressed that there's a good chance that PED test could have been a little bit tainted, could have been wrong. I don't know if voters hold that against David Ortiz. I don't know if they will or not. I think when you look at his numbers, he's definitely a Hall of Famer, a first ballot Hall of Famer at that. And David Ortiz is going out on a positive note to where people have forgotten 2003. I don't think anybody even cares about that. This guy was a class act. Spent pretty much his entire career in Boston. Had a 5-year stint in Minnesota. Outside of that, I mean, he's a Boston Red Sox. And again, he's one of the most important players to ever wear that jersey. As far as the designated hitters of all time go, I think you got Frank Thomas. You got Edgar Martinez. You got David Ortiz. However you want to slice it and dice it, however you want to order those guys, I'm fine with it. But those are the three guys. Frank Thomas, he's a Hall of Famer. Edgar is not. I hope eventually he gets in. Those are the three greatest designated hitters that I've ever watched. Frank Thomas, Edgar, and David Ortiz. Congratulations, Big Poppy. That's a fantastic career. Very important to the entire athletic landscape in Boston. He's a beloved Red Sox player forever. In fact, you go back and you look at the three championships that he won. Out of all those guys, Pedro Martinez, Manny Ramirez, all those guys went on and played somewhere else. You look at some of the bigger names. Not Big Poppy. He finished in a Red Sox uni. That's going to do it for us on the show today. Always fun to talk with you. Get some NFL talk, some Major League Baseball talk. Dodgers and Nats going to get it right now. The Giants will try to avoid elimination again tonight. 6 o'clock start time as they take on the Cubbies. I want to thank Coach Eric Nielsen for taking out the time to join us on the show today as well. Best of luck to the ladies' sport and soccer team as they travel on the road to take on Waterford tomorrow. We'll be back tomorrow to do it again right here beginning at 4 p.m. It's Drive Time Sports on 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Be safe. I am out.